Please welcome Red Red Bee.
Hello. People of Davenport, let's see a sea of hands for Red Red Bee.
What's up, everyone? This is another episode of That Record Got Me. Hi, I'm your host, Rob Elba. As always, it's wonderful having you all here with me. My guest today is vocalist, songwriter, actor, writer, etc., Michael Wiener. His current project with musical partner Jim Coleman is called The Children... Their second album, A Sudden Craving, was just released by the label Erotitux Decodings and is available on their website, Erotitux.com, and all the streaming platforms. We're going to hear a little of that. But the record that got him high and that we'll be discussing is the 1994 release, Jimmy Wine Majestic, by Chicago band Red Red Meat, both an album and band I knew nothing about. Go figure again. But as usual, I missed the boat because it is really great. So don't just take my word for it. Here is my conversation with Michael. Yeah, let's stop. Before we get into Red Red Meat, tell me a little bit about your recent project or your current project, The Children.
Are we now recording this?
Oh, I've been recording. I record right from the start. I don't play around.
And is this unedited or what is this?
I edit. No, I heavily edit. So okay. I edit and okay. I make all it good. Smooth. So all don't good. Worry about it. Yeah,
it's all good.
The Children, I know, because I actually did. I do, besides listening to the album that you brought in, which, by the way, is great, and I love it. But once again, it's something that I had no idea. Never heard of them. Was never on my radar at all. Red Red Meat.
Excellent.
At all. Yeah, so, which was great. And I was really pleasantly surprised. It was awesome. But also, I didn't, obviously, I didn't know about the Children, but this release that you just have now, A Sudden Craving, this like just came out though, right?
Yes, it just came out. It's a very weird feeling. Very, very weird after all these years. Yes, very weird.
Awash in the lavish. What escape of origin. Belodge in the cabin. Slotted steak ball regime.
Mostly good, occasionally terrifying, but yeah, no, but yeah.
Yeah, well, that's and I did. I went to. I mean, is the best. I found it on Bandcamp and the childrenband.bandcamp.com. So that's a good place for people to go check it out, right?
I don't see why not.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, and so. Well, listen, we were gratifyingly released on the label Erotitux Decoding by the sort of underground. What am I going to call him? Sort of the underground. I don't know. He's a connector. He's a cultivator. He's a patron. He's a musician himself. Chandra Shukla. He has this label, Erotitux Decodings. They release all kinds of. It's really some of the most adventurous. It's really one of the more adventurous underground labels I could think of. And so you can find it on that website, and then that leads you to the Bandcamp link. So, long story short. And Spotify. Spotify also.
I don't like to mention Spotify, but whatever.
It is what it is.
I know, it is what it is.
You can cut that out of it.
No,
you
know. It's
but,
fine.
You know, some people I know are like, oh, can I find it on Spotify?
I'm know, like, okay, I know. You can't get away. We just can't get away from it. We can't escape it. For now.
Right. Now. At one point, it was more like YouTube, and now YouTube is more of a visual. You know, it's partly visual, so it's like, you know, like for music. You know, so it's
exactly.
We take these are the evils we accommodate and we compromise with and we make the most of. So I guess right. So
and that's great. So you brought up this this label, and I guess they're putting it out on vinyl too, right? They're doing a vinyl release.
Oh, definitely,
really cool.
Definitely on vinyl. We have a beautiful vinyl package, and I think there'll even be a CD as far as I understand it. So, you know, for whatever it's worth, I actually still acquire all those tapes, CDs, and LPs myself.
Right.
A lot of people don't, most people don't, but I do. And so I welcome something to be in various media, and I'm very resistant to social media. I don't really do it myself. I'll think outside of LinkedIn, but you know, which to me is a different thing, but We do have the children underscore now on Instagram. I know that I don't administrate it, but it is there.
Right. Okay. It's there
for whatever it's worth. For whatever it's worth.
I know. So. And it's just, you know, that's one thing. Also, I just wanted to talk to you about a little, because it's so different now. Like talking about something like this band Red Red Meat, who I'm guessing I'm not the only one. I'm sure there's many people that just never heard of this band, and they never, you know, obviously they were just around a little while. I guess the band that the main guy, what's his name? Tim Rutili?
Rutili?
Yeah, I guess his next band, Caliphone, is some people might know more, right?
Funeral singers with charity fails. Whose child are you now? Lighthouse keeper graze the lip.
Yeah, interestingly enough, I mean, I there's plenty of affinity between the two bands. I feel like one is sort of a direct line, sort of like a continuum to the other. Red Red Meat's final record, Star Above the Manger Tonight. I mean, all four of the records are, I don't really know the first one so well, but Jimmy Wine, Majestic, the follow-up, Bunny Gets Paid, and the final album, Star Above the Manger Tonight. I see. What I was saying is that I see Red Red Meat on a continuum with Caliphone, which is a little bit of a little bit more of an underground indie kind of mainstay. And the final record really kind of leads more directly into its kind of sprawl. It's kind of like exploratory quality. It leads more directly into Caliphone. It's a little more a bit of a collage and a bit of a meditative kind of a reverie. Jimmy Wine is a little closer to the beginning, is a little closer to kind of like even though in the span of a couple of years, bands can, you know, people and artists and whatever, human beings can evolve quite a bit. And so the first band, and there was some personal tragedy in the band and so on at that time, is a little bit harder edged. It's a little bit more directly kind of garage rocky and punky and kind of bluesy, like a little bit more songy, one might say. It's more structured in a way, although it, of course, as you I'm sure noticed, Rob, it kind of veers out into the stratosphere as well. But Caliphone's a fantastic follow-up to it, and it kind of is, it's a bit more, you could see it as a little more, I think that Tim probably, I don't know him, I gather that there was some, you know, I think in the early years the band was kind of like, you know, Chicago and 90s and getting in trouble and kind of dealing with some of the excesses of the time, whether it's being 20 something or being like, or whether it was drugs or whatever it was. I think there was I think the music sort of displays a certain ability to tap into the darkness, and it's pretty ragged. It's pretty jagged and ragged.
Right.
It's pretty primal. And I think that like it's probably an accurate depiction of the inner spiritual life of Tim and his collaborators at the time, Mazzarella and all the various other collaborators, Brian Deck. He lost his partner at the time to AIDS, Glynis Johnson.
Yes.
And the band went on to sort of as a, you know, so-called, I don't know, they portrayed it as sort of a tribute in a way, soldiering on. And Glynis had been, I guess, kicked out of the band I don't know what the behavior was or what the relationship was, but anyway, I guess in the context of today, there could be some uncomfortable things about male and female interaction and why was the woman, you know, who knows?
Right.
One doesn't want to speculate on something one doesn't know anything about. So,
well, that's what this podcast is all about, speculating on shit we don't really know about, but that's fine.
Well, there you go. But for our purposes in this podcast, as you say, Rob, we have some majestic work that is really powerful, and it was a formative influence on me as an artist, as a writer, as a performer, etc. As a critic, I've also been a critic as well, and a DJ, and all these things. So I've been around music in different capacities, and around performance because I'm also an actor and writer and screenwriter and playwright and all kinds of things. So as a narrative artist, as a storyteller, the record has a great deal of impact on me.
Right. And so that's the one thing I want to touch on, because yeah, you could almost see this the way it is. They do sort of delve into the darkness, and some of this record is really dark and everything. But I hear that in your release that just came out, the children, that's also very dark and dark stuff. But but you're obviously, this is your whole, you're drawing on, you know, a lifetime, like a whole lifetime, the people you're playing with, these people that have all played in other bands and have been through it all, and that's really interesting to me. That I'm really drawn, and I'm sure you are too. We're people. I feel like people like us are drawn to music that feels like it's made just because someone feels like they have to make it and have to do it. And it's not necessarily, they're not trying to write a hit song. They're not trying to be commercial or anything. And you know, that's I feel like that's what we're really drawn to, and that's what I really appreciate about something. When I hear something like this, like the like your release that just came out now, The Children, I'm thinking, wow, man, you could tell how much work and care has gone into it, and it's really great stuff. I mean, I really wish I'm gonna keep listening to it, because I've been, you know, was doing my homework listening to Red Meat, but just my going through it a couple of times, it's great. It's really great.
Well, I really appreciate that, and it is an unusual piece of work, and that it's documenting a long gestation. You know, it comes out of sessions that were before the pandemic. It's mid to late teens.
Oh, wow.
The band, yeah. I mean, and a couple sessions which were several years apart, in fact, believe it or not. So this is a document of an entire lifetime, an entire sort of stage of a band's development. You know, some bands would call themselves, like, at this point, like, you know, mid-career or later. You know, like in terms of the time between when we kind of came together and had some live shows, and the time between we'd even did these recordings, and then the time that the record was released, which kind of came together during the pandemic and didn't really happen until as we come out of the pandemic. So it's like, you know, like not to use that as a marker, but it is a kind of an impactful thing that we've all collectively experienced. So I find it to be important to kind of use that as a framing device at the moment. But like, we've been kind of building to this for, like, as we say on the Bandcamp site, over 15 years, this release. So it's actually kind of a miracle that it came about. And as you say, there's the layers, I think it shows in the music, you can hear the layers of architecture,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
that,
right.
that accrued over time. Yeah. It's, I'm very pleased. As I said, it's kind of scary, but it's exciting. And,
yeah,
you know,
no, that's great. Yeah, and I do hear. I mean, there's all. I don't even want to try and describe to anyone what it is, because you just got here. Because there's a lot going on. But I do hear like this, the Red Meat, especially this release, which, by the way, this release, Jimmy Wine Majestic, came out in 1994 on Sub Pop. And there's blues. It's almost, if I was just to be flippant with someone, I'd say, oh, they're kind of like a bluesy Nirvana, or, you know, like that, a bluesy early Nirvana or something. But obviously that's, you know, that's not really describing it good. But I do hear blues also in this project that you just came out with, the Children as well.
Well, certainly. And we cheekily call it, or I cheekily call it, Gothic Blues Ambient as our self-described genre.
Okay.
And I think it's actually fairly accurate for,
yeah,
the kind of music that we've made, you know? So,
right.
I guess, like I say, people just have to hear it to know what I mean by that. But
exactly.
I feel like it does live up to that moniker, you know. So
right. So when did Red Meat? So this came out in 1994. Sub Pop. Did you hear? Were you like a fan from the start, or did you discover them later on?
I discovered them by being sent the album by a Sub Pop as a critic.
Oh, nice. And, okay.
If I recall correctly, I wrote about it somewhere, and I don't remember where. We could try to dig that up. I written for larger and smaller publications, and so and not so much lately. Although I do still write for Dusted, which is a cool kind of underground web. They cover a lot of great stuff. Really knowledgeable critics there. But I moved on to being a performer and a writer and all sorts of things outside of criticism, my own work. And so so the album was sent to me. I probably have it in the same form, but it was like the slim little jewel case, relatively early in terms of critics being sent CDs and whatever.
Right.
That's how I discovered it. And it became in my early New York life. It was still fairly early, coming out of college and everything. It was kind of like, I remember I would play it for people who would come over for, like, we'd have our like disco moment before going out. We'd have like we'd have a toast. We'd take a shot, whatever it was. We'd have a, who knows what we were doing. Maybe it would be a shot of vodka or whatever it was. And we would have the, I would play like particularly Stained and Lit was a track that I would often play,
right,
as a way of starting the evening. I'd put like the candles out and set a mood, and then I would play that as a way of kind of bringing my guest into my world before went out and went out to Max Fish on Ludlow Street or whatever the experience we were having was, or to a show at CBGB's or whatever,
Right. Well, I'm assuming you gave it whatever review. I'm assuming you gave it a good review. You liked it right from the start.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a seminal influence for me. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. It just, and the thing is, I was trying to think about it with what else was coming out in that time, and it definitely stands apart from a lot else, because it's still, it's got guitar riffs and it's heavy, but these songs, so many of them are given like so much time to like breathe and develop, and at times it's like noisy, it gets really noisy, but it's beautiful. It's like all really beautiful the way it all, and you could tell once again like there's a lot of care. There was a lot of care put into this music and to these, it's not just it isn't just verse, chorus, and then lead and then out. It isn't just that at all. They definitely, a lot of these songs just really take their time.
Yeah, my favorite art is the art that is, and the art that I try to make is the art that's uncompromising but can reach people. So for me, it's like you're not, you're being authentic to your craft and your vision. You're really not pulling any punches, but you're also trying to shape something and mold something that might resonate for an audience. And I think that this work can stand as something that is, truly unique and uncompromising, but is also something that people can resonate, all this time. I mean, this is a lot. We're talking about, it's hard to imagine that this is 30 years ago, but it is 30 years ago. So.
Yeah. And actually, before we start playing it, I just want to mention that they just recently put out a 30-year deluxe reissue of it with a bunch of extra songs, and that's on their Bandcamp. So you can go to redredmeat.bandcamp.com. And get that, the 30-year anniversary of this, which I did. And like I said, it's great. But let's start.
Amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's great. All right, let's start listening to the record. Let's listen to the first track, Flank.
Call me by the time I'm over.
Yeah, so right from the start, you get those Stonesy, you know, Stonesy riff. But I will say, the first song kind of tricked me because I kind of thought, oh, okay, I see what this is going to be. I see what this record is going to be like. And then as I went through it, I was kind of wrong. You know, it was a lot more than I thought, than the first song led me to believe how it was going to be.
Right. The first song, I guess, was a single that, in fact, from what I understood, led the band to Sub Pop. It was a single that had been released. And it certainly feels like a single if you look at it in the context of the record.
Right.
You know, it's a bit more, I don't know, sort of terse and pithy, and it's kind of like this kind of like condensed potent blast of sound, and it's, you know, but he has such a unique voice. It's so plaintive, it's so sort of like so nuanced, and then he has these kind of fragmentary lyrics that feel like, I mean, which is throughout the record, but like it feels a little you referenced Cobain, it feels a little like these poetic fragments, and without music we might not understand why he's written the song the way he has, but the way that the kind of like bricolage of their music, they're kind of like, I don't know, it's just kind of like this cluster of energy and ideas and swirling kind of stream of consciousness, almost like drug induced haze kind of stuff. You know, it just makes a lot of, it just feels, you can feel it viscerally, you know? So
It's great. I definitely wanted to talk about some of his lyrics because they are very fragmented, as you say, but they're really good and they're very poetic. Dust it off and in your hand, a taste enough to wreck. Pull the smoke out from your angels, frost out from your blues. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what that means, but it sounds great when he's singing it.
It really does. And, you know, I looked up the lyrics myself, and some of them are a little inscrutable, not only in terms of what they mean, but in fact, you know, like I like that they're murky. I like that it's a little bit like if you want to compare it to the Stones, I would say to some degree that happens on Exile on Main Street, which is obviously a much bigger record. But like, there's a little bit of this sort of murky kind of inscrutability to it where you can't even understand what he's saying. And even the transliteration of the lyrics, I'm not sure they even captured all of it. I mean, it sounds like there's more lyrics that aren't even possibly even captured on in the lyric sheet.
I'm sure. Yeah. Some of it online. Yeah. I'm sure not all of it's correct, but it's,
it's close.
Right. Yeah. But it's great. But like you said, it's a lot of and more of his delivery of the lyrics and the sound of it, which is great, which is something I always really appreciate because it's much more. That's what makes it music, poetry, as opposed to just poetry when it's, you know, when it's actually presented. That's like half of it, you know.
It makes me miss those days because in a way, you know, this is coming out of like the 80s underground thing. And like there was still, even though some of these bands are just getting signed to major indies or even majors, they're still uncompromising in that, as I said, to use that word again. And not everything has to be understood. You know what I mean? It could be elusive. You know, whether you could even make out what they're saying or whatever it is. You know, like, and I like that. You know, it's mysterious. Well,
don't even get me started about what I miss about music and how. Don't get me started. All right. So this next one, Stained and Lit. You know, one thing I just want to point out: I'm going to be playing little clips of these songs, but they really, obviously, especially with this type of band, they're not gonna, you're gonna have to go to their Bandcamp, find the record and listen to the entire thing, because I'm playing clips, but a lot of these songs take their time and develop, and this is definitely one of them here. So I just pulled, you know, some of it, a little clip of it, but it's awesome. Let's listen to a little bit of Stained and Lit. Thank you. Yeah, so where I faded in, that beautiful, like, intro thing, there's a minute even before that that it's just going, and it, yeah, it's just so great. And I could totally picture, this is, you're right, this is the perfect thing to play, like, in the at night before you're going out, you know?
yeah, that sort of, you know, there's a piece of dread in there, there's a piece of ecstasy and hope. And,
right.
Sort of wallowing in the mire of, you know, like, melancholic, it's so many things, you know, and it's
yep.
that sort of fuzz tones and the kind of, this kind of like, I don't know, what's like this kind of tom sound or something. It's like this like percussive, you know, like this sharp percussive, you know, and it's like, it brings back some memories.
Oh, I'm sure. And then once again, I'm so like, I don't know, I guess it was much harder back then to find certain things, but Sub Pop, I was a fan of Sub Pop, and I knew, it's like, how did I totally miss this band though? But I'm thinking they really just didn't, they just weren't around, I guess, long enough and just didn't get, I mean, I guess I read that for this, around this time, they were on tour with Smashing Pumpkins, which Siamese Dream that had just come out, another Chicago band. Which definitely you could draw some parallels with some of these like instrumental, moody instrumental things. Smashing Pumpkins did that as well, especially on their earlier stuff.
Yeah, apparently they were a part of a short. They went on tour for a little while. With Pumpkins, not long, not for very long, but for a little while.
Okay.
And you know, and Pumpkins, who I mean, Siamese Dream is, you're right. I mean, it's obviously much slicker and much more sort of, you know, produced.
Yes.
in terms of like, it could be sort of like a bit more of a kind of a package and kind of like a, it's well produced. I actually, in some ways, prefer the kind of the record that kind of led to Siamese Dream, which is of course Gish,
right,
which is a little closer to this, you might say.
Yes,
and a little rawer. But that being said, you can hear the germ of something gigantic in this music. You know, it's really it's gonna be overwhelming at times, kind of a crushing sound. That
it's true, and it's all done. It's done really well because I'll be honest. A lot of the bands of that time, like the so-called grunge bands, I wasn't necessarily a fan of because it was just too bombastic, too much heaviness. But there wasn't nuance. There wasn't the nuance that you find here. That by preacher. So that's you know, this is something I would have liked a lot more, I think, had I heard it.
Very true. I would say if you're going to look for nuance, if we're going to talk about big sort of grunge bands, I mean, I would certainly say Soundgarden, Super Unknown definitely has a good amount of nuance, actually. But it's not as cryptic and as enigmatic as this. It's
right.
It's not quite as challenging, but it definitely has. It's like this in a way, if you're going to relate the two, where they're very different kinds of records. But I do think Super Unknown has a lot of majesty and has a lot of beauty to it. And this is just a more underground type of a record, you know?
Right, but, right. I'm a fan of that album as well. I wasn't talking about them so much as there were the other grunge bands, you know, Stone Temple Pilots and bands like that I, you know, that just more about, you know, didn't have this nuance. Like this next one, Brain Dead, again, another song that takes its time, you know, and it's got that really beautiful guitar interplay. Let's listen to a little bit of Brain Dead. Thank you. Yeah, this is the song I think that it came when I realized, oh, okay, these guys have actually a lot more going on than I thought originally from the first song. And I really love the production of it, especially the beginning, when he's singing, and it just sounds like someone sitting with an acoustic and there's nothing put on his voice, and it's really raw sounding. And then it sort of comes in, you know, by the chorus part, they double up the vocals a little bit. I really appreciate the restraint in the production on this, where a lot of it just sounds really raw.
Yeah, I agree. And then I guess at some point we'll tie it into the Children record, which I think, you know, there's some linkage. There's some kinship, you know.
And, right.
My collaborator and producer Jim, who's not here today, sometimes refers to what he's seeking in the pastoral in our music, and I feel like you have that here. I think what he means by that in this context would be that sort of sense that the music kind of wafts, and it kind of feels like you've got a mic right up to the guitar and the vocals, and it sort of feels unfiltered in a certain way, and unrefined, but yet pure and potent, you know, as well, and sort of present, you know.
Yeah, and it creates an atmosphere, which I did hear in listening to the Children as well. I guess that's why you ambient. I think you threw ambient in there too, which is a very good description, because yeah, you sort of get that feeling of atmosphere and expansiveness, even when it's like you said, when something's close mic'd and everything, but you still feel more, you know, you still feel like a whole atmosphere going on.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so yeah, there's a lot of mystery, I feel like, on this record, you know, in the lyrics. And the slide, we didn't even mention there's a lot of slide steel guitar, which is Glenn Gerard is playing the lap steel guitar, and you also have Brian Deck on drums, who's great, a great drummer, Brian Deck, and Tim Hurley on bass.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Right.
But yeah, the slide guitar definitely it adds like a whole different element to this, which I think would also set them apart a lot from other bands at that same time. But let's definitely be present here. Let's just do a little bit of Smoky Mountain Double Dip. You know, it's funny listening to it now, and I'm reading the lyrics that I pulled from the internet. These lyrics cannot be right.
Well, yeah, I don't think they're right, but if they are right, it's sort of, I mean, like, I think that they're, you know, there's most, a good portion of them are right, and then the ones that are wrong are kind of hilariously wrong. If
they are
wrong.
Right.
Or are they, say, like, who knows where, you know, like, what's the origin story here? Like, maybe there is some kind of complex narrative. I'm not really sure.
Right. You know? Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because we didn't mention the cover at all, but the cover of this is really striking, and the name of it, Jimmy Wine Majestic. Do you have any idea about any of this? Like, Jimmy Wine's mentioned in this song, Jimmy Wine Found a Hole, but do you have any idea?
I have to confess that I don't really, and if I did, it would be because I'd be looking it up right now.
Right.
You know, so I
tried already, but yeah. I kind of like that. I like that when things are left cryptic. And I also like, I don't really mind the fact that we're not sure what the words are, what he's saying. Because, you know, as you said, it's all about the delivery. And, you know, look, R.E.M., when R.E.M. came out, Murmur, we all loved Murmur. We had no idea what the fuck Michael Stipe was saying, but it really didn't matter.
This name of God, we all agree. She could stop it, were it.
That's true. That's true. I think as we go through the record right now, Rob, it's I'm seeing it as and thinking of Glynis's death and everything. I'm seeing it as you know, there's you can see some of the songs feel like they're written to another person. I was thinking, for whatever reason, not to sound pretentious, but I was thinking of the French philosopher Roland and writer Roland Barthes. I'm thinking of the idea of the self and the other, and how that sort of reflected in his music. So it's like you feel like this is a sort of a love letter to something that is disintegrating, and that could follow from the nature of and the lyricism of some of these songs as well.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Yeah, and that's great. And you know, at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter if that was the intent. That's what you're getting out of it. So that's fine. That's totally fair and valid, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even and you did sound a little pretentious when you referenced the French guy, though. But well, that's fine.
I'll take that as a compliment.
No, it's fine. Trust me.
I welcome being pretentious and being.
You know, once in a while, hey, you know.
I mean, listen, I just did a graduate program at Dartmouth in interdisciplinary liberal arts, so you know, in cultural memory and generational trauma and. Medical, the public health and mental health and right. Where they converge. And
you
like
own
that,
that shit.
Yeah. So you it feels, I might as well own it. You know,
I was just going to say, own that shit, Michael.
As you say.
All right. I think this next one, Mooncalf Tripe, is probably my favorite. I feel like it's kind of a standout. It's another but super slow builder. And, like I said, me saying that it's probably my favorite track, and I have no idea what the lyrics are. And what it means, but it just sounds so good. Let's do a little bit of Mooncalf Tripe. Nice, man.
Yeah.
Just great. You know, there's nothing like the sound of people just playing together. You could hear them playing off each other and playing together. And like I said, taking their time, which is something I really appreciate about this whole album, how it doesn't, it's very, and I guess that's blue. I guess, do you think it's just the fact that they were from Chicago that they lean into that there's so much of this blues influence in them, in their sound?
Well, you know, Chicago was a fertile fertile ground for the underground. At the time, you know, you had Quarter Stick and Touch and Go and all these different sort of formative labels that were, you know, home to a lot of artists that had a quietly profound influence on music at the time. I think that certainly blues. I think that's a fair statement to make, even though, you know, the bands of that era were drawing a lot of different from rock and roll. I mean, you could think of something like Urge Overkill.
40 miles west of Kansas City, down a county road like a lone soul.
Who yes, I believe is still pretty underrated. So can you think of some of the bands that were a little bit more, obvious or accessible or flamboyant? And then you could think of bands like Tortoise and so on and so forth, and think of this, you know, kind of like more composition oriented, more more deconstructive type music,
right,
which is,
right.
is a little bit of both here.
Yes.
I think we have to draw on our history and our influences and our foundations to create interesting work as a musician or as an artist. So I think that if you're going to draw from the blues and then deconstruct it, that's a worthwhile project, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. And then, yeah, it's funny. You mentioned Overkill in this next one, Sillamange, more of a straight ahead rocker, which is sort of brought them to mind a little too. And I agree also that they were kind of that they're an underrated band, and we actually did them recently. Someone did bring a Urge Overkill record to the show, but let's listen to this one, Sillamange. Yeah, if these lyrics are correct, they're great, I think. Lazy glass eye let you down. I don't know which one to look in. All I want was for you to stay strange, Sillamange. So again, you know, cryptic, but really great also.
Yeah, and again, we're coming back to that. You know, I'm trying to make a joke about you're making fun of me for my pretension, but coming back to that idea of the
yes.
self and the other, and whether that other is Glynis or the audience or the act of Bart might say the act of sort of like who is one writing for kind of idea, like
right.
Who is that other that we're speaking to, whoever that is, when you make affecting art, and when you make, you know, profound art, you're doing something that I think the most effective way to go about it is to be authentic and to come from a place that's very personal and specific. And the closer you're able to kind of home in on that kind of primal essence, the more it's going to kind of resonate for other people. So whatever the purpose of these lyrics is, and the music, you know, it has an impact as
yeah.
a result of that unwavering quality.
It does. That was actually a great way, I feel like, to put it, because yeah, we're making a I was making a joke that it's pretentious, whatever. But no, I think you're absolutely right, because yeah, there is a place for AC/DC and listening with something that just rocks and you know there's no depth to it. But this is something, yeah, if you could appreciate something on different levels, and you could tell that it's authentic. You use the word authentic, which I think is really good in the context of this whole album. It just makes it deeper, and it just makes you appreciate it all that much more.
Yeah.
So there you go. You could tell you were a critic, a music writer. That was very well put.
Oh, all right. Good.
All right. So we get another great mysterious number that rocks. But again, they have this like lazy, in a way, lilting way that they rock. I guess a lot of this really swings. Even though it's like blues based, I guess I feel also that it kind of swings. And this is a good example of that, I think. This is to a little bit of ball.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a cool song, and I think that's a good example. It really showcases the fact that at the end of the day, these guys are all really good players too, just really good players.
Yeah, I think that's why the record. I think that's also why the record works so well, because it might seem haphazard or, you know, it meanders or whatever, but because there's such a sort of they're so attuned to each other, and there's such a kind of ability to execute. It translates, you know, it doesn't become the sort of sloppy, haphazard kind of thing, you know,
right.
It coalesces, you know, so yeah,
exactly. All right. So we got another track, again, I'm not sure what it's about, but it's cool. Let's just do a little bit of Lather. So when this came out, you were playing music yourself, or did you sort of go into that a little bit after that in the later 90s?
I was not playing music myself. I did grow up playing classical piano and ragtime and violin, but I'd put music aside for many years. I'd been into music. I DJed. I'd done, you know. But I was not playing music. I was writing about music, and the playing music is a far more recent development, Rob. I was listening to music, and I was gradually getting into becoming a performer and an actor, but not so much a musician. But I did start to get asked to front to, you know, I remember that the guy from what's his name from Helmet, not Page, but I'm blanking on his name, not Bogdan, another guy in Helmet, asked me to start to front Handsome. And I auditioned to front this band Handsome that made something of a stir in the 90s.
Oh, okay. I remember them. I remember Handsome.
Yeah. Helmet offshoot. Nice. So there were a few requests like that, or I would be like dancing on stage for a band or things like that, but I was not actually in a band, you know? So,
right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool. That's cool. That's interesting. But yeah, that's but you were already a huge music fan, and then you were soaking it all in, right, at this point.
Soaking it all in, writing about it, and it was kind of my gateway into being a performer in some ways.
Right.
It was one of the gateways.
Okay, nice. All right, so Rusted Water, another nice like rootsy bluesy song where you got the acoustic and you got the steel guitar. It's really nice. Let's listen to a little bit of Rusted Water. Yeah, so we didn't mention, I don't think we mentioned it, it was produced by Brad Wood, who also did Liz Phair, Exile in Guyville, and Sunny Day Real Estate. And yeah, just once again, I think he did a really good job on this whole thing, because it just doesn't have that, you know, slick produced sound that that some other bands at this time were starting to have.
Very true. And I guess Brad was coming out of, I guess he was probably coming out of Chicago at the time. As such, we had this kind of, you know, kismet between the underground and somebody who went on to produce some records that were a bit more mainstream. And I think that was the nature of a fertile kind of a thought cross pollinating that was going on in Chicago, you know, where people were coming together because they were excited about what they were, each other was doing, even if they came from somewhat different sort of places. They kind of, maybe you need a producer like Brad Wood to bring together a record like this. That's just so, you know, what it is, you know, it's so right. Unique. You know?
Yeah. And one thing I was thinking, this album came out at the time when I started, they started to have CDs, and I always have this idea that some bands started just putting more songs on them because they had room, and maybe there wasn't. But one thing I appreciate about this record is that it doesn't get all samey, because the second, or the last couple of songs definitely are really different and go into different territory. So it doesn't, you know, all sound the same. And, this next one, Gorshin, maybe the noisiest thing on the record, but it's also really like pretty and hypnotic, and it's nice. Mm-hmm. Yep, let's do a little bit of Gorshin. Yeah, alluding, maybe you were alluding to maybe the excesses a young band might be going through. This is going on here. Do you think it's like an homage in a way to Frank Gorshin? Do you think that's why it's called Gorshin?
Frank Gorshin, the actor Frank Gorshin?
Yes.
Right.
The Riddler on Batman. You know, most people know him as the Riddler.
Exactly. I don't see why it wouldn't be.
Right?
I mean, I would never even have thought about it. But I'm trying to see, like, how the lyrics would evince that, but it's not clear. Maybe a little bit.
Yeah, well, maybe it's
spotlight
something
coming around again, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and maybe it's something it read about maybe later on in his career. He was like maybe one of these boozy actors. So
maybe, or maybe like maybe you know, the band was sitting around talking about Frank Gorshin at a bar, like the empty whatever the bar is, empty bottle. Isn't that a bar? Isn't that a performance space in Chicago?
Oh, okay.
Whatever it is, like they're sitting around talking about Gorshin, and they're getting, you know, trashed on scotch or whatever, you know.
Yes.
So,
and the song ended up being, yeah, that's probably closer to what it is, but yeah, I just thought that was really
hard to say. Yeah, the word that comes to mind once again to I know my reputation precedes me, but to talk about sort of the idea of the immediacy of it, and the to borrow from the literary term again, the medias res, the idea that they really bring us immersively into these moments, you
yes,
know, and then
yeah,
sort
right,
of like
right.
this whole experience, you know, about, I feel like we're getting this diaristic depiction of the experiential sort of experience that Rutili was having at the time, and you know, with Johnson and just the band in general, the kind of I don't know, whatever the experiences they were having, you know, at that moment.
Right, right. And it does make it, like I said before, authentic, or like you said, it does make it feel very authentic. And it's almost like it's not so much that some of it is bluesy, but it feels like the blues, like what you described is something the blues is, you know, at its essence. It just makes you feel a certain way. And that's what I feel like they're doing here on a lot of these songs.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. This next one too. It sounds pretty authentic to me. Let's do a little bit of Dowser. Yeah, really cool. Really sets a mood, and I like how the last three songs of the whole album work, because this next one comes is like a nice little acoustic respite. I feel like in a way the record has taken you through the ringer. You know, it's kind of a journey. So this is like kind of a respite from that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, yeah, let's do a little bit of Come.
Jawbone tension, tan your scar. Douse your eyes. Shadow strange to kill a taste of you. Aim your silver fountain glass halfway spent. Lost my patience halfway.
So yeah, so when you got this to listen to from Sub Pop, I could see why it would make an effect, because it really did sound different from a lot of other things coming out at that time, right? It's like now, through the context, you know, 30 years later, we hear, oh, okay, a lot of bands would do stuff like this on their records later, but this was at that time, this was really something unique, right?
Yeah, and I would argue, Rob, that in fact we haven't heard that many bands do anything quite like this. I don't feel like it's really been duplicated in any way. I mean, like, the closest thing to duplicating it might be Caliphone, but like, Caliphone is more, as we said, is more of a sort of a meditative kind of a drifty. It's a little more. Yeah, it's less. I don't know. It's not as raw as this. So
right,
it's
right,
just
right.
It's not as. It's not as much of a rock project. It's a little bit more of a little closer to an ambient project, or that may not be quite a fairly loose description of it, but it's not as hard edged. It's not as primal.
Right.
And this is, yeah, as you say, but I mean, to your point though, I mean, I'm thinking of the bands that resonated for me at the time. There are some that had a little bit of an echo of this, another band that maybe we'll talk about on some future date. The band Surgery, which I think is kind of like a really unsung, was another one of the ones I was going to suggest.
Right.
They came out with even on their major label debut, which in some ways is their best record, Shimmer. Well, their only major label record. There was that sort of attempt to kind of assimilate blues rock and kind of update it and bring it through this kind of like narcotic filter of that particular era, this kind of like sort of this decadence, this kind of poetic decadence, you know, maybe it's a little bit like Rambo or something, you know, it's like kind of like this gutter punk poet type of stuff.
Right.
And so you hear that a little bit, and maybe you hear that in maybe in Afghan Whigs to some degree, you hear it in Surgery, you know, some of the bands that were coming out of the Lower East Side to some degree, but a lot of them were a little bit closer to kind of like pure noise rock than than Red Red Meat was. So and yeah, Surgery would be one of the closer comparisons, and it was one of the only other records that came immediately to mind when I was going to come on this show, you know.
All right, so now let me ask you what you think the final track, Roses. It is very Stonesy. We didn't mention the Stones a lot, but I feel like this one's Stonesy, and I'm wondering, it's called Roses, sort of an homage to Dead Flowers, Roses. I was wondering that, but I think it's a really nice closer for the album, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We could talk about it more. Let's listen to a little bit of the closer. It's also, again, something you really got to hear the whole song, but I'm just going to play a clip of said, it's really, it goes through, it's a 6-minute song, so just playing a clip doesn't really totally do it justice. I wanted to mention really quick that that's on the Hammond organ, that's their drummer, Brian Deck, on the Hammond organ, which is great.
Excellent. Nice, great minds think alike, Rob. I was thinking the same thing about that sort of reverberative
yes.
quality in the background there, and how it kind of lends this kind of gravity to the song. And that, you know, Deck was from what I understand, Deck went on to produce some bunch of records, and play more with I think he's been part of, I think at times part of Calafone, if I recall correctly. I could be wrong, but you know, here he's playing. He's really focused on being a player and being part of the band and being a collaborator.
Yes, yes.
And he brings a lot to the record, of course. And you were talking about the lap steel, and you know, I think this last song, as you say, is a nice sort of punctuation mark. It kind of really brings the record to a close, and it has this kind of elegiac quality, you know.
Yes. Oh man, it's great. And like I said, what a great surprise. You know, you brought in a record. Originally, I should say, you wanted to do a Game Theory, but Lolita Theory, but we had done that a while ago. But this just came out of, like I said, came out of left field. He said, all right, well, let's do another great one, Red Red Meat. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? But I was very pleasantly surprised.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was actually thinking of one of the riffs in this track kind of remind me a little bit of Lolita Nation, which is another record that is profoundly, profoundly influential for me.
Yes.
You know, which has hard-edged, but is also, you know, more of a gentle, it's an art pop record, but it can be very hard edged at times, and very complex and layered as well. So those were two records that really, it came out a little earlier than this one, but it's, you know, in the scheme of things, you could say a lot earlier, just because it was about 7 years and a lot of evolution in underground music during that period of time. But that being said, there's some affinity between the two, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And all right so like I said, one more time, you do if you like me never heard of Red Red Meat, the 30th anniversary deluxe reissue of this album is available on their Bandcamp, redredmeat.bandcamp.com. And I'd also, like I said, really recommend you checking out Michael's latest project, The Children, which you can go it's
Erototox Decodings. Erototox Decodings is the record label. The album's called A Sudden Craving. and it's the Children dot 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 is the proper name of the band.
Oh, okay.
Full name, not correct. I'm just clarifying.
No, no, and no. So, that's good.
It's that pregnant pause at the end. You know, it's that sort of sense that there's
okay,
more.
Okay.
It's that sort of sense that there must be more. You know, to what we're saying, right? That there's, you know, so that's sort of like what we're trying to impart there.
Yeah. And any live, because I was seeing it's all very theatrical too, very theatrical. So I could be, are there live shows planned?
Yeah, so that's really in formation. I think that there's a good chance there might be a European string of shows, at least a short one, and later in the year towards the fall, maybe some New York dates. Who knows what else? I mean, we welcome interest and input, but we're still figuring it out.
Right.
You know, the record just came out, and we're kind of gauging the response. And everybody's, you know, so Jim is, you know, my collaborator and producer, Jim Coleman, is has this sort of super group called Human Impact, which is more of a straight ahead kind of metal punk kind of project. With Chris from Unsane and a drummer from Daughters, and Phil is on tour with Swan. So they both have these pretty high profile projects.
Right.
And I'm doing various writing and acting and job oriented stuff. So we're also geographically separated now. So you know, we have to figure it out. But yeah. I think that we would be remiss if we didn't come together with some shows, and there'll be more to come on that. I think
that's great. You know, we have two choices. We could sit around and just watch TV and do nothing, or we could just totally overfill our plates and do all this. But it's great. At the end of the day, that's what makes great art, and that's what makes life worth living, right?
100%. And of course, we had a couple years of collective trauma there, where there was a lot of isolation,
yes.
And now we're having kind of this reinvigorated period,
yeah,
which a lot of this,
sure.
You know, this record itself comes from conversations that happened during the pandemic. So this is, I think there was an opportunity, as difficult as it was, to learn something about what's important to each of us during that time, and what's important to us as a community and as a civilization. And so this is a time to not take things for granted, as you say, and to kind of plunge in and seize the day and you know, feel inspired. So
yeah, you know. And as I said, it's really good stuff too. So I definitely recommend people checking that out. If you want to follow me, I still am on the socials, on Instagram and Facebook. It's at That Record Got Me High. On X, it's at TRGMH Podcast. You can email me at TRGMH33@gmail.com. Most importantly, if you want to become a patron of the show, you can go to patreon.com/TRGMH and become a patron. I'd appreciate it. Michael, this was really great. And this is a great album, and I appreciate you taking the time and coming on.
My pleasure. And yes, I guess for what it's worth, it's the Children_now on Instagram. And you know, I think I mentioned the rest of the ways.
Have all the links in our show notes too on the website as well.
Excellent.
All right. So
thank you.
I'm Rob Elba. We'll see you all next week. We're out of here.
Oh!